380 lectures on Ancient philosophy. These pageantries ostensibly were to assist the ignorant in understanding the profundities of the faith. In reality, however, they were perpetuations of the ancient Gnostic practices which the Church Fathers outwardly opposed but inwardly accepted. At this point, a subject germane for discussion is the destruction of the pagan mysteries, or the death of Great Pan, as it was enigmatically called. The Church affirms that the Gentiles, in their frantic eagerness to embrace the new Christian faith, deserted, to a man, their heathen altars. Those familiar, however, with the lengthy pleadings and arguments employed by the early Church Fathers to convert unbelievers will realize that the accounts of the pagan stampede toward Christianity are more of a rhetorical display than a true statement of the actual facts. As more than one author has observed, the pagan mysteries actually fell from the combined effect of treachery and profanation. Great Pan, like Caesar, drew his cloak about his face and fell from the thrust of his dearest friend. Yet Brutus was an honorable man. He did not slay for personal gain or because he loved Caesar less, but because he loved Rome more. So with the mysteries. The rending of the temple veil symbolized the abolition of the mysteries and the birth of that new dispensation which sought to liberate mankind from bondage to a despotic priestcraft by making the way of salvation equally accessible to all men, irrespective of their intellectual, spiritual, or ethical status. Carried away by the blandishments of worthy ideals such as these, Christian zealot persuaded pagan proselyte to commit that most impious crime imaginable, namely, to divulge the secrets of the mysteries. On the assumption that the end justifies the means, many initiates broke their holy obligations and thus wrought the destruction of those sacred institutions which for uncounted centuries had been the custodians of the secret doctrine. It was but a few hundred years, however, before the Church awoke from its disillusionment, recognizing that spiritual equality was but a figure of speech, it straight way reversed its position and proceeded to retrench itself. Ancient Mystery Rituals 381. Behind the very mysteries and rituals of the pagan institutions it had overthrown. Thus pagandom died to no good end, and the new faith rose upon broken vows and the sincere but misguided efforts of pagan initiates. Upon the desecration of their sanctuaries, the masters of the greater secrets retired therefrom and adopted secret means for the perpetuation of their knowledge. The oaths broken for the glory of God produced no tangible results, for the power of the prize craft was not destroyed but merely shifted from one organization to another. Through their first spokesman, the Christian Church admitted the P.O.S. session of certain mysteries and spiritual secrets, and these are still preserved in its ritualism and ceremonials. But for lack of certain august mysteries which had not been entrusted to such initiates as might break their vows, the whole body of the inner work is not now and never was in the possession of the Christian Church. For lack of these elements of knowledge, mystagogues could not interpret the symbols which were accepted solely for their apparent virtues, and hence rituals lost the name of action. So from an outward figure and an unquickened form, the science of sacraments and ceremonials was established, the virtues of which Samuel Butler in his Hudibras thus describes: with crosses, relics, crucifixes, beads, pictures, rosaries, and pyxes, the tools of working out salvation by mere mechanic operation. Upon vain ceremonial and empty rite the anti-ritualist vents his spleen. All too keenly he senses the superficiality, the tawdriness of outer show, but most of all the absence of the inner spirit. but in common with all extremists, because he does not like a part, he would sweep away the whole with imperious gesture. Because he is dissatisfied with the rituals with which he is familiar, he declares the whole science of dramatic instruction to be composed of stuff and nonsense. Estimating things as they should be by the rule of things as 382 lectures on Ancien philosophy. The arc, the modernist rejects all in the efforts to escape an objectionable fraction. In the ancient mysteries it was declared that broken oaths induced their own punishment. Religion in the hands of the rabble bears terrible evidence to vows and obligations turned recreant. In time, however, these things will pass away and the beauty now deeply hidden within each deed and thought will again come into its own, for error is mortal, but truth is immortal, and though crushed to earth, shall rise again. For thousands of years the ancients perpetuated, aided by dramatic instruction, those secrets of the inner life, which formed the substance of every mythos. The New Testament of the Christian Church is itself a book of rituals, for it is filled with allegories and parables which inspire by virtue of their dramatic power. Although drama was employed by the priests, it is not essentially a priestly art, for it is an instinct present among even the most primitive types, and serves the innate desire of every creature for self-expression. Though in a certain sense a reproductive or imitative art, it is more than this, for it provides an adequate channel of expression for the surging impulses of the soul. We must therefore fight to preserve those arts by which the nobler moods of man can be interpreted. Without such means of self-expression, the individual is a locked soul whose inhibitions must ultimately canker the whole nature. We might very properly ask ourselves, however, if we can preserve the beauty in ritual and allegory when we have rejected both the religious and ethical systems of which ritualism was the natural expression. Is it possible to live crass and material lives, war shipping our own industrialism while still maintaining the integrity of mystic rites and pageantries? The answer is obvious. Lee in the negative, for we cannot serve the God of beauty and the spirit of selfishness at the same time. Man must choose the gods he will serve and abide by his decision. The sorrows of this century are abundant proof of the folly of his choice. Yet ridiculous as it may seem, the day is not far distant when the world, tired of its modern gods, will revert to the pantheons of earlier days. Already a suffering humanity is. Ancient Mystery Rituals 383. Turning from a god of gloom to seek the god of joy. Caged within the ever-narrowing confines of its commercial endeavor, humankind is seeking to escape and raise again its altars among the hills. The gods of the terminals have grown intolerable, the human soul desires again to fraternize with the rustic spirits and know the carefree life of the faun and satyr. Great Pan is not wholly dead. Someday he will burst the bonds that chain him in the dark abyss, and returning to his rushes by the stream, will again play glad tunes upon the pastoral pipes. Pan is the patron of the rites and rituals, Lord Keeper of the dance, and peculiar spirit of the depictive arts. 100 years ago it was predicted that within a few centuries men would revert to the gods of Plato and Aristotle, and tired of a distant spirit would rejoice in the proximity of kindlier gods and daemons. We may all look forward with eager anticipation to that nobler day when the gods of philosophy once more shall rule the world, when all will be right in the heavens above and upon the earth beneath. We are weary of our somber codes and dismal doctrines, creeds that hurl men at each other's throats in the frenzy of selfishness and passion. We desire to again make the acquaintance of those laughing spirits that speak from the waterfall and inspire all men to a rational camaraderie. The scientist may scoff, the modernist deride, and the theologian shriek blasphemy from the pulpit. All these things are merely incidental, for it is the soul of man that endures, and it is the soul of man that must be satisfied. Mortal institutes rise and fall, but the urge of self-expression never dies, because that urge issues from divinity itself. Men can be ensnared for a little while and their purposes temporarily turned aside. Ultimately, however, they will be themselves, and this being like self involves the expression of the inner motives through the medium of the arts. A new age of beauty is dawning, and a race long servant to its greeds and baser desires is turning toward the contemplation of a nobler purpose and a more exalted destiny. Man, threefold mystery. In this diagram, the divine nature of man is represented by an inverted triangle, with its lower point resting in the heart. The spheres of power upon the upper points of the triangle are the anthropo, or oversoul. From the spirit in the heart come forth two poles, one ascending to become the mind and the other descending to become the generative system. Chapter 17. A philosophic consideration of Eman. Considered philosophically, man is the microcosm, or little universe, the miniature creation in whose composite nature are epitomized the various orders of life, divine, super, mundane, and terrestrial. Like a fetus, writes H.P. Blavatsky, he is suspended by all his three spirits, in the matrix of the macrocosmos. Humanity, then, is still in an embryonic state. And, dwelling within the darkness of the sidereal womb, is suspended from cause by a threefold umbilical cord, the cable toe of the Freemason and the braided cord of the Brahman initiate. Of the threefold spirit, Paracelsus writes that the first has its seat in the elements, the second in the spirits of the stars, and the third in the divine nature itself. Centuries before, Proclus had defined the triune nature of man as three monads, which are one monad being suspended from unimaginable unity. The first monad is the eternal God. The second, eternity in its own nature, and the third, the paradigme, or pattern, of the universe. A similar doctrine was promulgated by the ancient Kabbalists, whose profound investigation of transubstantial natures revealed that man's superior nature verges toward God, his inferior part toward the earth, and his intermediate part toward the spheres whose radiant energies flow through that intangible atmosphere called the astral light, or anima mundi. Should be borne in mind that even body is primarily a spirit form, being merely the objectification of the formless monadic physical principle. Soul is likewise an astral spirit. Hippolytus declared that the Assyrians considered the soul to be a triple unity, soul signifying the causal nature, the threefold monad of Proclus.